Hi guys, hope everyone's well and welcome back to the Improvement Podcast. In this episode, I'm going to touch on why we should be evidence-based, not just science-based, and why following research may be holding you back. So as for why I'm creating this episode, there's of course more and more research we see online, and you see a lot of individuals, they'll post their views, cite a study or talk about some study, and then people will take that as gospel. They'll just go and run with it, even though they might have not looked at the study. The study might not actually be that reliable. It might not have had much other research papers showing the same outcome. And people just follow them blindly, when that can be a very, very poor route to go down, which we'll get to, the reason being. And as for what we want to do instead is incorporate research into our practices, follow partly what science says, or take it into consideration, because it's a tool. So why would we not use that tool, as well as using other evidence as a tool? So other evidence can be what we see in the gym, what I see of client results, what other really big people have done over years and years. Because especially right now, you'll see a lot of people and like kids on TikTok, and not to talk down on anyone, but they don't have a lot of muscle mass, and they are training in a way that they don't really need that. I don't think it's that effective training, basing their decision making purely on research. That's probably shooting them in the foot. So we want to be evidence-based, which means considering research, but also anecdotal experience, and also how something feels. That's a good enough reason to make some decisions. You don't need to make every decision you make based on what someone else tells you you should do, or what some research paper says is correct. Because there's research isn't always accurate, which I'm going to touch on. So it's not that all be all end all, and the reason being is research disproves itself time and time again. Sometimes research will come out saying this produced X outcome and this produced X Y outcome. A great example is there was like a study that showed that creatine can contribute towards hair loss, but that was disproved. So there, like, if someone just takes that study and run with it, then they don't consider everything else, then they're just maybe thrown out the window one of the most effective supplements they could possibly take just because one study which has been disproved since. So I know obviously that's not an example that comes to training, but it just shows you like if research can like disprove itself time and time again. So if it disproves itself, then why, when research shows one outcome, we shouldn't just like completely change your approach? We should be like, right, this is something to consider. This could be potentially valuable to know. A great example is like lengthened partials. Lengthened partials is when you perform partial reps in the stretch in the middle position of a rep. It was shown that lengthened partials can provide similar outcomes to a full range of motion. And what does that tell you? Does that tell you should maybe jump straight to doing lengthened partials? No, but it does tell you, right, maybe the most important part of the rep isn't the contraction, the shortened position. Maybe that's not where we should be trying to really like spend most of our time. We shouldn't really emphasize the contraction. We shouldn't really, maybe we don't need to like emphasize pausing there, or we don't want to miss out on that stretch position. That's what it probably tells you there, instead of just thinking the stretch is gospel and putting all your movements in that stretch position, because there's downsides of it. Downsides of that could be it's hard to compare your work. The stretch is often a bit more unfriendly on your joints, a bit more harsh on your joints, and there's a bit more injury risk in that region. So there's problems with like certain methods of training, and we should use all evidence and all science, and then base our decision making upon that, and then come to like a outcome based upon what we feels best from all of them, instead of just seeing a study and running with it. And as for like another problem with science and research is who is participating in the study. So this is something I heard Dr. Scott Stevenson touch on, who's very interesting to listen to, especially if you're you like sweating the small stuff when it comes to bodybuilding, but who goes into studies? Do you think someone, for like me, for example, would I go into a study? Like, see if someone told me, right, we want to put you in a study for 16 weeks where we're going to be doing something that is probably not optimal for your training. It's probably not the best to do to see if it produces X outcome. I will tell them to bog off. I will not be doing that. The reason being is I care about my progress. I want to maximize my progress. So I'm doing everything I can to do so. Someone who may go into a study, for example, let's say someone's not got much motivation for training. They can't be bothered right now. They've not got much drive. They're not progressing well. They're willing to kind of deviate and be flexible with their training. They've not got that rigid structure and plan. And then someone comes along and let's say they work in academia or they're in college, or they're in university, or they just get, they see something in terms of like a recruitment for a study and it states they'll be paid X amount, or they'll get a free gym membership, or they'll have some sort of merit towards it or value towards it. Or maybe they just look at it as, right, this is an opportunity for someone to push me and maybe help me get results because I'm in a bit of a slump with training. They're probably going to be more likely to go into a study, right? So bear with me here. So if those individuals are going to be more likely to go into a study, do you think they'll make more progress than someone who's nailing absolutely all their variables? All their variables? Probably, because they've not been currently doing so, because they've been lackadaisical in their approach. As a result, they'll probably get results from that study. So that shows you that when people go in studies, it's probably not people who are wanting to compete and step on stage. It's not. So the people in studies aren't always in the same shoes as you. It's not always people that are valuable to have in research, because they can't always be that picky with who they have in research. And what that tells you is the people in studies or the results might not be applicable for where you're at. It might be applicable for the individuals and the participants in that study, but you might be stronger than them. You may not be stronger than them. You may have had more experience than them and are further in your training career, and the same approach that may work for them may not work for you. And another great example is like there's studies showing like the effects of like training volume and like higher volumes being better for muscle growth. But everyone's got different muscle groups that respond differently to others. So genetically, I need a lot of work for like my upper body, my arms, for them to grow. But my legs, I can get away with doing 5 sets in a leg day and they feel pretty sore the next day. So there you can see the approach can be different for each body part, which is why, again, we shouldn't look at, right, X amount of sets is great, we should do X amount of body part, because it differs from individual to individual. A lot of factors will impact it. And I've got something else that can impact it is your skill. So if someone's extremely skilled at, let's say, performing a movement, they might be able to get more out of less work. So they might need less sets as they get more experience, because the quality is higher. It's like a dart player versus me. If I'm playing a dart player, they can probably get the same score with less darts, or maybe a higher score with the same amount of darts as me, or not, maybe they will be able to. So that's a good example of, although maybe we've got the same amount of sets, the same amount of darts, they can get a lot more out of it because their skill's higher. So that's another reason why the amount of sets should be different for each individual. So, and as for like something else we can consider is like the duration of the study. How long is this study being carried out for? Has the study been carried out for 8 weeks? If so, what happens after that 8 weeks? Do individuals burn out? Do individuals get injured from that approach? Do individuals does that approach just stop working? Because you get something called stretch-mediated hypertrophy, which is when you can increase muscle fiber through getting more stretch and perform or adding more sarcomeres in series, which is basically adding more muscle tissues in line. You can kind of thicken muscle or add more sarcomeres. That's something that doesn't just happen infinitely. So if someone's never used to getting like a really good stretch, they can get novel stimulus, they can get novel gains and more muscle from being exposed to more stretch, but that just won't keep happening and happening forever because you get adapted to that. And then you stop kind of getting progress from that, if that makes sense. You stop getting those new big gains from the stretch. So there, that's another kind of example of why maybe some approaches might not work past the duration in the study. And sometimes like the study might not be enough to see a meaningful difference, because when we're thinking about the pace of muscle growth, especially as a natural athlete, especially quite far into your training career, muscle growth happens super, super slowly. So the research studies you're looking at, although, or maybe not even looking at, that some guy on TikTok citing saying this doesn't work for muscle growth hypertrophy, has it had enough time to be a meaningful effect? Because if someone's very experienced in their training career, natural bodybuilders will often do an off-season for many years and come back and be the exact same stage weight. Why? Because muscle growth happens slowly when you become advanced. And also, you can of course get leaner next time you step on stage. But yeah, it might not show a meaningful effect in the study, but it may over a longer duration of time. Because maybe when they're measuring the muscle growth in that region, there might be some things at play that could skew the data, like inflammation, like if someone's had more carbohydrates, so they're storing more glycogen, or maybe they've consumed more or less water than when they're measuring the muscle growth after the study, for example. So sometimes it's not been long enough to have a meaningful effect, or maybe it won't have a meaningful effect after a certain period of time, which is something to consider. Want to consider a duration. And of course, we've also touched on briefly things like genetic differences. So who are the individuals in the study? Could they maybe have, if it's not got a lot of individuals in the study, let's say the study's on 5 people, maybe they've just seemed to have very good genetics. Or maybe the study's on, let's say, 50 to 100 people or 200 people. Or then that would be a bit more reliable, because I think it's the mean of the study. So the average result's probably going to be a bit more reliable for the average individual because they've got more individuals taking part in that study. Some other variables we want to consider in research is nutrition. So see if someone's doing a study based upon like building muscle tissue or holding on to muscle mass while dieting. Did they control for the participants' nutrition? If they said yes, then did the participants actually comply when they stated they complied? Maybe not. And with the participants in the nutrition, if they didn't control their diet, then how do we know that diet didn't have a part in their ability to get results? And also what we can think about as well is, with the nutrition side of things, even if they had guidelines regarding eating like a high protein intake, do we know that they again followed it? Do we know what their carbohydrate timing was like, how their protein timing was like? So there's all these moving parts that we may not take into consideration with studies, which can influence things. And also we can look at sleep. So for the participants in the study, how was their sleep? What time of year was it? Was it throughout, let's say, Christmas, where people have a lot of social events, they were drinking more often, so maybe that skewed the data, because we know alcohol has an effect on sleep, your recovery capabilities, etc. So how are the individuals' sleep? Was all that controlled for? Did everyone have the same sleep for people maybe in the study, or people acting as like placebo participants, or the control group, for example, the people who are maybe not doing more than individuals in the actual study, or doing just like a baseline level so we can see if there is any difference between them. So how's sleep? How's stress? Did someone go through a breakup during the study? Did someone get sacked from their job? Did someone have like a deadline they need to prepare for example? And things like work as well. What's their like activity like? So you can see there's all these variables at practice. So that's why we need to take things with a pinch of salt. So yes, a study got X outcome, but why did it get X outcome? Who were the participants, etc.? And were they actually training to failure in the study? Or were they monitored throughout the study? Were they taken to failure by the researchers, or did they do it on their own and maybe their intensity wasn't what they stated it was? And some examples of like studies that we may not want to like take as gospel is things like low rep work. There's a lot of like people just doing low rep sets now because it's less fatiguing, but the reason why that might not be a good idea in practice is, it's yes, on the surface level we think, oh, low reps, less fatiguing, I'm going to have a better ability to train without getting tired, and I can get more from my training because fatigue will impact your ability to build muscle. Correct. However, is the fatigue worth worrying about? If someone's super new to training, they are, let's say, 16, they've just stepped foot in the gym, they're not going to have the same fatigue as someone who's doing like a deadlift with four plates and squatting with four plates and bench pressing 2.5, for example. They're not going to have that same level of fatigue, so they don't really need to worry about it. So the approach is for people who are maybe just starting out and people training for 6 years are going to be completely different. Also, injury risk. Is it worth the injury risk doing low reps, even if low reps are better for muscle growth? So there's a lot of caveats. Another caveat you can look at in terms of low reps is thinking about your ability to stay on that target muscle. So for me, when I'm training a part of my back, let's say my lats, which is usually like quite a difficult muscle group to train that people don't have a lot of skill training, I can do a 6 rep set and stay on the muscle and have a really, really good pump. Whereas someone else, they will try and do a 6 rep set and it's all over the place. They've not really hit their lat at all. It's everything else but their lat working. So there you can see how your rep ranges should be based on the individual. So then that study is not necessarily relevant or true for every individual looking at it, and they shouldn't follow that approach. And you shouldn't take it as gospel and just do all low rep work for that reason. And although there's not research on something, it doesn't mean it's not true. For example, high rep work, I don't think there's a ton of research right now saying that like high rep work's needed for muscle growth, but that doesn't mean something won't come out in the future. So for the sake of doing a couple high rep sets here and there for certain muscle groups, or maybe a drop set to get the equivalent, or if, let's say, metabolic stress, which is getting a pump, it's not got like clear data showing like it definitely causes muscle growth, because it's hard to measure without lifting loads, but it's not a bad idea putting it in there. It's probably not going to harm you. So we shouldn't wait for research to make certain decisions, but we shouldn't also sway our decision making as soon as a paper comes out. And also there's EMG studies. EMG is a form of research which they can like test muscle activation, and that can have a poor reliability when they are measuring muscle activation. For example, if I was lifting a dumbbell and let's say the bottom half of a bicep curl and it was really heavy versus just contracting my bicep really hard at the top of the movement with no load, the EMG would pick up more muscle activation in the bicep when I am like contracting it with no load, but we know that's not going to be better for muscle growth. So there's a lot of things we want to consider. And as for researchers as well, do they have a bias? Even if maybe they don't think they do they have an unconscious bias? Because if they're putting all this time and effort into a study, they want to see an outcome. If they really want to, like, if they're, especially if like they've got any sort of like social media, or if they've got any financial interest behind it, maybe they'll want to like find a positive outcome that backs up their belief. So that's something you've got to consider as well. And a good thing to look at is when people are like citing studies, like a meta-analysis, that is a statistical method and it combines multiple research papers. It combines multiple studies on the same topic to find out like an overall conclusion. And that's going to be more reliable than just using one study, for example, because some might show different outcomes. And we've also got to consider the placebo effect. So placebo effect is if we are, let's say, there's a study, like, was it placebo controlled? Because sometimes if I tell you, right, take this drink and then you're gonna perform a lot better in your sessions, you go in your sessions thinking, oh, I'm gonna perform a lot better, you being confident going into your session may yield better performance, although the drink I may give you might not actually do anything. So something else we want to consider as well is the goals. Also, like, you see a lot of people arguing online about being like, this is right, this is do this, do that. And it's like, the goal's not to be right, the goal's to produce results. So like, when it comes to your training, like, see if you carry out something in terms of your execution, or you use a certain structure for your movements and it feels brilliant. If something feels really, really good, that can be enough reason to do it in that fashion. Sometimes like a client will ask, should I do this or that? I'll say what feels best. They'll tell me and I'll be like, do that then. Because everyone's different. Everyone's structurally built different. Everyone has different genetics. So that's why we want to consider the individual and not just follow research blindly and be evidence-based. Because a lot of like evidence has a lot of what bodybuilders have done back in the day is now kind of backed up by evidence, or some of which, for example, like John Meadows, for example, he was big on getting like a really big stretch. He used to incorporate some like partial reps into his training, and that was before partial reps were even a thing. So, and bodybuilders will maybe like skip the top half of the lockout when they're training their chest. And the reason being is that will be a bit more tricep according to neuromechanical matching, which is basically neuromechanical matching without going down a rabbit hole, is where you'll use a certain muscle at each point of the rep. So like, if they just wait for a study to come out in 30 years time, their career has already ended. So there you can see it's probably not going to be favorable for them to wait that long a duration. So to conclude, the goal's not to be right, the goal's to produce results. So don't feel like you need to do what's always right in research. Don't think you always need to follow research, and take into consideration research, and don't just, and also evidence based on anecdotal experience. And there you can get like the blend of both, not just relying on studies, not just relying on what feels good and being a bro, but there's a blend of a mix of something you can do in between that I feel like will produce the best results. So